Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 15, Chapter 2. Besides a feeling of aloofness from everybody, Natasha was feeling a special estrangement from the members of her own family. All of them, her father, mother, and Sonya, were so near to her, so familiar, so commonplace, that all their words and feelings seemed an insult to the world in which she had been living of late, and she felt not merely indifferent to them, but regarded them with hostility. She heard Danyusha's words about Peter Ilyinich and a misfortune, but did not grasp them. What misfortune? What misfortune can happen to them? They just live their own old, quiet, and commonplace life, thought Natasha. As she entered the ballroom, her father was hurriedly coming out of her mother's room. His face was puckered up and wet with tears. He had evidently run out of that room to give vent to the sobs that were choking him. When he saw Natasha, he waved his arms despairingly and burst into convulsive, painful sobs that distorted his soft, round face. Petya, go, she is calling. And weeping like a child and quickly shuffling on his feeble legs to a chair, he almost fell into it, covering his eyes with his hands. Suddenly an electric shock seemed to run through Natasha's whole being. Terrible anguish struck her heart. She felt a dreadful ache as if something was being torn inside her and she was dying. But the pain was immediately followed by a feeling of release from the oppressive restraint that had prevented her taking part in life. The sight of her father, the terribly wild cries of her mother that she heard through the door, made her immediately forget herself and her own grief. She ran to her father, but he feebly waved his arm, pointing to her mother's door. Princess Mary, pale and with quivering chin, came out from that room and, taking Natasha by the arm, said something to her. Natasha neither saw nor heard her. She went in with rapid steps, pausing at the door for an instant as if struggling with herself, and then ran to her mother. The Countess was lying in an armchair in a strange and awkward position, stretching out and beating her head against the wall. Sonya and the maids were holding her arms. Natasha, cried the Countess. It's not true. He's lying. Natasha, she shrieked, pushing those around her away. Go away, all of you. It's not true. Killed? Ha ha ha, it's not true. Natasha put one knee on the armchair, stooped over her mother, embraced her, and with unexpected strength raised her, turned her face towards herself and clung to her. Mummy, darling, I am here, my dearest mummy, she kept whispering, not pausing an instant. She did not let go of her mother, but struggled tenderly with her, demanding a pillow and hot water, and unfastened and tore open her mother's dress. My dearest darling mummy, my precious, she whispered incessantly, kissing her hands, her head, her face, and feeling her own irrepressible and streaming tears tickling her nose and cheeks. The Countess pressed her daughter's hand, closing her eyes and become quiet for a moment. Suddenly she sat up with unaccustomed swiftness, glanced vacantly around her, and seeing Natasha, began to press her head with all her strength. Then she turned towards her daughter's face, which was wincing with pain, and gazed long at it. Natasha, you love me, she said in a soft, trustful whisper. Natasha, you would not deceive me. You tell me the whole truth. Natasha looked at her with eyes full of tears, and in her look there was nothing but love and an entreaty for forgiveness. My darling mummy, she repeated, straining all the power of her love to find some way of taking on herself the excess of grief that crushed her mother. And again, in a futile struggle with reality, her mother refusing to believe that she could live when her beloved boy was killed in the bloom of life, escaped from reality into a world of delirium. Natasha did not remember how that day passed, nor that night, nor the next day. And night. She did not sleep and did not leave her mother. Her persevering and patient love seemed completely to surround the Countess every moment, not explaining or consoling, but recalling her to life. During the third night, the Countess kept very quiet for a few minutes, and Natasha rested her head on the arm of her chair and closed her eyes, but opened them again on hearing the bedstead creak. The Countess was sitting up in bed and speaking softly. "How glad I am you have come. You are tired. Won't you have some tea?" Natasha went up to her. "You have improved in looks and grown more manly," continued the Countess, taking her daughter's hand. "Mama, what are you saying?" "Natasha, he is no more, no more." And embracing her daughter, the Countess began to weep for the first time. All right, there we go, another chapter down. And grief has struck the Rostov household. Not looking good. Yesterday, Who Was Once Delight asked, "Do you think Petya's death will recall Natasha to life in the same way that the needs of the estate and Andrei's son did for Maya?" And that was a pretty good call there. Good question, because it seems like that's exactly what's happened. Even it said a line about that. But the pain was immediately followed by a feeling of release from the oppressive restraint that had prevented her taking part in life. So it has brought her back to life. That's pretty cool. And a good call there by Who Was Once Delight, who saw that coming yesterday. De Fleury said, "I believe Natasha's just bounced back." Chattel Velster said, "How will she deal with both losses at the same time? Will she think about that terrible, overwhelming question again about and grieve about Andrei, or will there be no room left besides her mourning for Petya and comforting her mother?" Yeah, I think she's not going to be happy, but she's going to feel that she has some purpose and some duty to fulfill in helping her own family through this time. Which, I mean, it's an awful thing, but a good silver lining, I suppose you could think of it in that way. Chattel Velster said, "What did have more impact on you personally, Maya or Natasha's reaction to the death of Andrei after a long time in his sickbed, or the tears, screams, and beating of heads against the wall of Count and Countess Rostov after hearing about their son's death?" Ooh, probably this one. I remember Andrei's chapter didn't affect me much, although it didn't affect me much at first, and a few days later it did. It settled in and did affect me quite a lot. But this one is very much more visceral. Screaming, banging heads, tears. It's anguish. There's so much anguish, so it's very... it's visceral. Chattel Velster also asked, "At the end of the chapter, Countess Rostov says, 'I'm so glad you've come and you've grown so handsome and manly.' And Natasha says, 'Mama, what are you saying?' Let's copy Natasha's response and use the same question. What was Mama saying? What was happening there?" I was a bit confused by that as well. I think she was hallucinating, seeing her son's face on Natasha. Natasha had gone into the room, and Countess Rostov, for a moment, thought that Natasha was Petya. I think that's what was happening there. All right, that's going to do us for tonight. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.